Like for many, my journey with Godot started with a 2D game that involved tile maps. But that's a few years ago, and things have changed since then. Tile maps got a lot more powerful, and no one than Jackie Coates is better suited to explain what's the current status. You might know her from Twitch or YouTube. And please welcome Jackie Coates.
Hello, everybody. This is so weird. I'm so used to just like a number on Twitch saying something, and I don't even want to count you guys right now. But anyways, guys, hello, everybody. You might know me as I was introduced, Jackie Coates. I do YouTube. I do Twitch. I'm a content creator. I've been using Godot now for about 4 years, and I'm loving it. Are you guys having a good time at the convention? Nice? Yeah. It's really, like, look at this beautiful room. Wow. All right, guys. So, quick goals. I'm going to start off the talk by just giving a basic overview of tile maps so that you're not completely lost. I want to expand your toolkit so you could see all the use cases for tile maps, because I've actually used tile maps in games where I didn't know I would, so I kind of want to see the possibilities and have a deeper understanding on how the tile maps work. Also to know what to expect when you're making a big game, because I've made a couple games that have many thousands of tiles, and I've ran into many crazy issues, and it's made me so thankful for some updates that happened, because a lot of the things I'm going to talk about wasn't possible in other versions of Godot. So yeah, I also want you to know where tile maps fall short so that you can plan around such issues. And yeah, let's get started. Yeah, again, who am I? What do I do? So yeah, when I was at home writing this thing, I was like, who am I? I kind of introduced myself in the beginning, but I just love game development. It's so cool. It's like the ultimate expression of human creativity, and I think we're all, I already know, like, so many of you are cool because you're into game development, and that's just, it just shows that you're creative people, you know. And yeah, that's, I really love game development. Like, I identify with that. Like, I'm a game developer. It's cool. I love traveling and talking to different people. Like, please, if you see me outside, do not hesitate to walk up to me, ask me questions, or just chat. Like, I would love that. And I know it's a little nerve-wracking, but I love talking to people. So yeah, feel free. All right. I just posted some screenshots of my itch.io games. I started in Godot 3. Some of them are mobile. This is the I don't know if you guys know the Boog Doty and Nature Spread. That was kind of terrifying 3D model. This was actually my first Godot game. I made it like in 3-ish days. Jumpity Doodle is just a simple platformer. Some of these I made in teams of game jams. Moon Bunny Awakening was really cool game jam game. I don't know if I've also done a lot of devlogs for these games, so if you're interested, you can check out my YouTube channel and see how they were made. Gnomes of War, mobile game, you can get it on the Android store. So yeah, I've been making a lot of games, and I've done thousands of experiments that haven't made it to itch.io, and I haven't actually published a game on Steam, which I really want to, but still, these experiments are super vital, and they help me. Like, now when I work on games, the process is just super quick because I've had all of these experiments. So I really urge you guys to just experiment. Don't get too caught up on publishing a game. Like, have fun with game development as much as possible if you have the budget to do that. I know it's, some people have different budgets and stuff. It's not always the best experiment, but yeah. Yeah, here's a tile map. I did this, I don't know if you have, did you guys see the Devlog Logan video, the 40-hour game jam? That was a really cool project. We all used the same tile map. And yeah, like my experience with tile maps, starting off this game and setting up everything just was so quick, because it gets really faster as you use tile maps more and more. And yeah, this was a turn-based game. And it was, yeah, a little bloody. Okay, yeah. Here is another. I think it's really good also to recreate games you've already played. So I made this in 6.5 hours on a live stream. And this is Terraria. It's very, you can look at it, but but it's still a fun experience. Like, the first game I ever made was Mario, so it's like, I really urge you guys to just, like, recreate games, even if you're recreating little things, little systems within games, because it really expands. You get to think how they made certain decisions. You can see the game design. And yeah, I've done Terraria. I did a little Darkest Dungeon experiment, Don't Starve, and yeah, it's always super fun. Sometimes I need to not recreate games because it's just too fun. So yeah, so here is one of my projects. It's gone through many names. If you catch my live streams, one name I probably shouldn't say on stage here, but yeah, the first iteration was full procedural generation. So all the tiles, there were trees, everything fully procedurally generated. And then I was like, oh, okay. Like, that was really fun messing around with noise and everything. But then I was like, okay, I like the procedural generation. It gives really interesting looking continents and stuff. So this is actually semi-procedural generation. So I'll go more in depth into how that is possible later and why you should do it and kind of the differences. But now the game, it's more like all no procedural generation. I'm like chunking it and I'm setting each tile myself. So it's interesting to like the stages I went through, but still the lessons I learned throughout each stage helps everything. So I think it was fun. So why should you care about tile maps? So yeah, they're very powerful. They could be used in use cases that you wouldn't think about, which I'll go over in a bit. Super easy to just create procedural generation, especially when you're using these Godot noise textures, and also grid maps, the 3D grid maps. I don't know if you guys have played Cassette Beasts, but Cassette Beasts was made using grid maps in Godot. I'm not sure how supported it is right now, but if you feel comfortable with tile maps, try using grid maps. You'll see like a lot of similarities there. So it's also super fun. And right now there's like a 2.5D revolution. There's so many games coming out. Okay, I don't know what that was. Yeah, so here is a little project I did using grid maps. And yeah, it was fairly simple to set up and it's super fun messing around with that. All right, so let's go over a basic understanding of tile maps. So you don't confuse the tile set and the tile map. It used to be tile map, now it's tile map layer. Only difference is that it's just one layer. And so the tile set is your library of tiles. So it could hold patterns, information about the tile size, the tile shape. It's a resource, so you can save it and use it on different tile map layers. It's important to like have a clear understanding the differences, because sometimes when you're trying to look for specific information, you don't like, and you open the documentation for the tile map layer, you're like, where's this variable? But actually you have to go into the tile set, or maybe you need to get the tile data. So it's just important that you compartmentalize, okay, what data am I getting? Am I getting it from this or this? So that's just kind of important. Also, the difference between map position and local position. So Local position is the normal position you use when you get the global mouse position. So as you can see, the mouse, like, okay, 0, 0 on the top left corner. And tile sizes are 16 by 16. So that position right there is 38.24 by 29. I just kind of give a guesstimation. And you can see that there are floats. So it's a vector 2. That's important. But when you look at the map position, which is very important when you're using tile maps, that same position is 2, 1, because you're taking into account the tile size and everything. So your tile size doesn't need to be 16 by 16. It could be 32 by 32, 64 by 64. But these functions automatically convert that. So you can put, like, if you want the map position, you can just put the global mouse position. It'll return that. And it's important to know it's a vector 2i, so that there's two integers. That's why it's 2, 1. Yeah, tile size. Those are the positions. So yeah, if you have a tile map layer, you can easily get the tiles using that. Alrighty. So within the tile set, there's three different tile types. You have your normal tiles right here. They're basically images to the size of that you have. So they're super fast. Simple images, decorative. Here are terrains. They're kind of a pain to set up. You need to do this bit mask, but they're beautiful. It also saves a lot of time, because technically, you don't need terrains to do all of these images. You could slowly put the tile pieces together, but that takes so much time. So that's why we have terrains. The reason why they're so slow is because if you look at one tile, it has to check each tile around the tile to see which one to use. So it's like constantly checking a bunch of tiles. So once you get into scenes with, you know, thousands of tiles, thousands by a thousand, it takes a long time to even draw it. Like, you should try just drawing a super large square using terrains, and you'll see that they're very slow. Yeah, and also, not only to place the tiles within the scene, but if you have a scene with big terrains and you're playing the game, it's actually much slower. So not only to place it, but to be in the scene. That's why, I'll go maybe a little bit later over that, but that's why it's actually good to chunk them. because if you have like a large terrain, and if you cut them up into multiple tile maps and multiple scenes, it actually runs a lot faster. And yeah, this is the thing most people are surprised about, the scene tiles. So you could see I set the grass and I set the trees all using tiles, and the scene tiles, and they're standalone own Godot scene. It's very easy, super powerful. Of course, if you don't like the grid-like pattern within the scene, you can make a little function to slightly alter the position, and you can do stuff like that. But scene tiles are super cool. But at the end of the day, if you look at the tile map, well, maybe let's not do that. But if you look at the tile map layer, when your game is running and you place scene tiles, it literally just adds that scene as a child of the tile map layer. Whereas normal tiles and terrains do not do that. They don't add it as a child of the tile map layer. So yeah, here are terrains. So you don't want to hand place all of these. You want to just easily draw it. So this is what the bit mask on the terrain looks like. So you could see I have terrain set. This is water and grass. So you could see here is the water, and up there you can see it corresponds to that. And yeah, it takes, if you have a lot of terrains, this is kind of annoying to set up. I will show you later on some plugins, make it faster. But yeah, that's kind of how you set up these rules. And this is called a 3x3 minimal. So it's 47 tiles. And Yeah, I'll also show you another tool to make it faster to draw that, because you don't want to be drawing 47 tiles for each of your different terrains. Yeah. But I don't know, I just, that I love how that looks. It's like the water in the grass. So yeah. So here is it's a GitHub website that you can use. So basically, instead of drawing these 47 tiles, you can draw just this. So you put it in there and you put 4x4 plus, and then you see it exports it like that. So you need to also test it. So you might have to make some adjustments to the tile that you've drawn. But this just saves so much time. It's an amazing tool. Yeah. And cliffs are just so satisfying to place. When I was working on LogCraft, it took me, like, I was thinking about cliffs for so long, and I did not know how to do the bit mask, because, you know, it's kind of different. They're like very tall, and just one day it came to me, I was like, okay, I can basically make the, where you see the elevation, that's basically just one tile. I think I'll highlight it right now. So yeah, you can, when you're setting up a tile, you can click on it and stretch it. So those are all just one tile. So it, you use the normal, you know, you see the bit mask is exactly the same, and it's treating this as one tile. You've just stretched it. And yeah, they're really nice to place. Okay. So before you, you know, think about doing procedural generation and stuff like that, you need to really think about, like, what tiles am I going to be using? Am I going to be using terrain? If you don't use terrains, then you most of your issues are you have much less issues, because terrains, like I said, they're super slow. They add a lot more complexity. So what tile types do I use? How big will the scenes be? I know it's hard to think, like, what does a 1,000 by 1,000 world look like? So yeah, just do little experiments like that to see how big it needs to be. Because it's like, do you really have to have an open world? Like, is it okay to just have small scenes that connect? Like, because if you want to have an open world, it's completely possible with Godot. There's a lot of things you can do to make that happen, but it's like, do you want to do that? Like, that's an important question to ask yourself. Yeah, so do you need to update? So in my game, you can chop trees. The trees, you're updating the scene tile. You can cut the grass. Like, even something as simple as, okay, you have a grass terrain. Do you want to dig and then there'll be sand? That's actually much harder than cutting a tree, because cutting a tree, you're just deleting the scene. But if you're digging the grass and you want sand to come over, you're updating the terrains, and the terrains, they kind of update as a chunk. So yeah, that adds a lot more complexity. And yeah, chunk or not to chunk. When you have big terrains and big worlds, you're probably gonna want to chunk it up. So yeah, here's some procedural generation. Yeah, we use noise to get that. I'm sure you've seen things like that. So yeah, it's important to speed up the time it takes to test out your noise, because there's some variables in the noise. Like, there's the frequency, there's different noise types, fractal, all different things you can mess around with. So it's always good to use the noise resource. You just basically go in Godot, get a texture 2D, and then add a fast noise, light, and then mess around with the variables, and yeah, just try to get the things you want. And yeah, you can also use multiple noise textures to get different biomes. You can't really see so much, but there's like, there's darker grass and lighter grass. So one texture is for the altitude. It just says, oh, is this water? Is this land? And another texture is for the temperature. And I think I actually had three textures here, and another one for temperature and humidity. And you can do really cool biomes. And yeah, also, before you jump straight into doing procedural generation, I think it's, I learned this very late, it's super important to do handcrafted first. So think about, what do I want the level to look like? What do I want this to look like? And to first place everything down, and then you can base your procedural generation off that mockup. That saves a lot of time because, yeah, you're messing around with a lot of numbers, tweaking different values, but it's so much easier to have like a basis for that. Okay. And yeah, here is the different values you can tweak with the noise. See, this is on texture 2D, or yeah. And you can see we have the fast noise light, simplex smooth. You can just change it and do tool scripts to update what that looks like. And it's I'll show you some tools. This is a tool I made to test out what different noises changes, how it changes it and everything. Yeah, I would have done I did this a while ago. I don't think I even used tool scripts. I think I was just clicking buttons within the runtime. So if I were to do this over, I would definitely use tool scripts, but it's also important to create tools to really get your areas looking the way you want it. Like, but also don't spend too much time on your tools. So yeah, you could see I even show what percentage are the biomes that I have. And yeah, I think it's pretty cool. So yeah, get comfortable with tool scripts. Yeah, and this is the only way that you can do semi-procedural generation, because like, okay, semi-procedural generation is when you procedurally generate it and then you edit it. So the way you do that is you, because the tool scripts, it basically runs in the editor. You don't need to run the scene in the game. It's running in the editor. So yeah, you run the procedural generation, all the tiles pop up in the editor, and then you can just edit it the way you want. So that using tool script, that's the only way to do that. Saving time and development is priceless. And here is a super simple tool script you can do to just mess around with it. So this is actually, I think it's fairly new. They came out with this in like 4.4 or something. But yeah, you could just, you have to put this at tool at the top. And this is a button. It shows up in the inspector and you can click it, and it'll just print hello world. And yeah, you don't need to run the game. You can just click it in the inspector, run whatever, you know, you can run your procedural generation function there, pop it up in the editor. And yeah, I messed around with tool scripts much later than I would have wanted to. They're very easy, and I really urge you to try them out. So yeah, like I said, the full procedural generation, semi-procedural generation. So, procgen, what's taken into account? So what tile types do I need? I went over that before. And how will I save and load tiles? So there's two ways you can go about saving and loading them. So you could have the world already built in the game, and you can just basically edit the deleted. So like, for instance, let's say you have your forest, and let's say you chop down some trees. So then you're adding that to a delete dictionary. They chopped this tree down, they chopped that tree down, maybe they planted a tree here. So the next time you load the game, it's not loading the whole tile map, it's just loading, okay, they chopped that, they chopped that, they added that, you know? So that saves a lot of time, but if you think of it over time, you're gonna be editing so many things, so it slows down as time goes on. So yeah, you could just load all of them. So make tools to test different things. And also, if you're doing like a semi-procedural generation, don't have like a giant, you know, landscape in your scene when you're testing things, because it just makes Godot super slow. And yeah, just start with super small sizes. And yeah, before ProcGen, do handcrafted. Talked about that. Okay, and if you have enemies that need to do pathfinding, you need to chunk the navigation regions. So I don't really use, there's nav regions that you can draw onto the tiles, and I don't use that. I use these nav regions, and it wasn't possible to actually chunk them up because you couldn't have two adjacent nav regions before, but in 4.3, I believe it was SMIX 8, he added that. That was a really nice thing, because if you think about it, when you place anything on the ground, the enemy pathfinding needs to be updated because they can no longer use that. So it's very expensive. That's why, like, people say don't build an open world survival building game, because you run into problems like this where it's very difficult to optimize, and deleting, updating the tile map with enemies, just it's a headache. So yeah, this is a cool thing I did with threads. So I know what you might be thinking, okay, terrains are slow, why don't I just pop up a thread? Why don't I just set the tiles with the thread? So you can use threads to set tiles, but the tile map cannot be on the scene tree when you're setting the tiles, because there's a lot of corruption that happens. It's not thread safe to do that. But in this project, what happens is when you load the world, let's wait for it to loop. So you can see these are not terrains, they're normal tiles. So it's just loading tiles, and in the background, the threads are creating the terrain tile map layer. And then when it's done, then it's adding it to the scene tree, and that's thread safe because the threads are doing the work before it's added to the scene tree. So you can do little tricks like that to speed it up. And you know, the user's not gonna care that much. Well, ugly tile for 6 seconds. Oh yeah, this is important. So grout is a very big contributor to the tile map. So if you ever run into an issue, you just blame grout. So that's his blue sky. You can write him if anything happens. Or there's a lot of other contributors, but it really helps to have someone to blame. Sometimes it's my fault. Like, I do admit that. He does come on my stream, and yeah, I kind of give him hell a lot of the times, but he's very patient, so I appreciate that. Yeah, so here are some plugins and tools that you can use. I haven't used this LDTK, but Grout says it gives you faster terrain. So it's actually a standalone editor, so you can, you know, you place all your tile maps within it, and then you use a plugin on Godot to like allow Godot to read the files. So you can try that out. Grout says it's good. This automated terrain bitmasks. Yeah, my friend made it solar, and it just makes it very easy when you have a lot of terrains that you're drawing, because I don't know if you remember, you need to draw the bitmasks to them, and it takes a long time. And using this plugin, you can just go in Asprite and draw it all in there and set up the rules, and it's a lot faster. You can check that out. Better terrains. I use this very little, but there's a lot of people that use it, so I feel the need to mention it here. I think I used it for the Terraria, the game. It made it much easier to do the terrains, but yeah, simpler, more flexible rules. So yeah, now power and powerlessness. So I'm sure you think like, oh, using the tile map to set scenes, wow, that's so cool. But it actually makes things a little hard, because you can normally get a tile if you have the position, but not with scene tiles. So when you place a scene tile, you need to catch it, like you need to have a signal, child enters scene, catch it, and then you need to put the location of that scene tile yourself. So it's not as easy to retrieve the scene tiles. You have to work around that. But in some cases, it can make it easier. So here is a game I made for a game jam, the Pirate Software Game Jam. It was 2 weeks, and I was inspired by Blueprints. Has anyone played Blueprints here? Yeah, that was a good game. I love that. So basically how it works, you open a door and you can spawn different dungeon rooms. It could be a monster room. It could be a shop room. You had to manage the door placement of it. And when I was setting up the placing of the rooms, I was using like nodes, nested nodes, and then I was like, wait, they're in a grid pattern. So basically this is setting it using the tile map, and it's using like a 200 by 200, I don't really remember, but I put that size in the tile set, and these are just using scene tiles. So yeah, some use cases like you wouldn't expect. But again, I need to have a signal to catch it when it enters the tree, and oh yeah, that's another thing. So you can't, it makes it more difficult if you need to input data into the scene. So it's like if I wanted to say, okay, this room is a reward room, I had to catch it after I put it into the scene. So yeah. Serialization. So yeah, saving and loading tile maps. How does that work? So yeah, there's different ways you can serialize the tile maps. I like, when I think of how I did it for LogCraft, I used a dictionary, which you can see there's a dictionary. So for each tile type, and the key basically gives information on retrieving it. So like the source ID, you could see the tile dictionary, there's a vector 3. The X was for the source ID, the Y is for the atlas coordinate, and the Y and Z are the atlas coordinates, and then it's just the position. And then the Godot could read that information and place the tiles using that. So that's one way of serializing it. And yeah, you need to use these functions, resource saver.save, and you just put your resource in there. This could be any name you want. This just puts it on your computer, and then you load it. But you need to create this resource however way you want. And yeah, when I was preparing for this talk and I was testing a lot of things, Groud showed me that you could also use patterns to save, which is really cool, and it's super fast. Even when you want to like place the terrains, I don't know how it works under the hood, but it actually eliminates the issue of the terrains taking a million years to place, even if you have a lot. Like I tested it with 1,000 by 1,000, and that's a huge tile map. Like when you're putting the terrains, it takes like 25 seconds for my computer to actually register that, maybe 20 seconds. So yeah, you could use patterns. So, and the cool thing, which I didn't expect, is that the pattern, it could have tiles, terrains, and scene tiles all in one pattern. So the way you would do that, let's say I place the pattern in the scene. So you get pattern, and then since this script is on the tile map layers, there's a get used cells, and it just gets all the cell positions. It's basically an array of positions of the cells, like the scene, terrain, tiles, and then you get that pattern, and then you can just save that pattern, and then when you want to load it, you just set the pattern. Right now, you have to put the position that the pattern is, and then you put that pattern that you save. So in this example, I didn't save the pattern position, so if you are implementing this yourself, you'll have to save the pattern position as well, but this is super cool. The only downfall that this could have is that when you put it into a pattern, then you can no longer get the information like, oh, these trees are have all like all the positions of the trees and all the positions of the water layer. Like, it's easier to update. Like, let's say you cut a tree. If I just have to look in the tree array, but if you do it with patterns, you can't. It's just one array of all the cells. But you could have like a hybrid approach, where maybe you use patterns and, you know, the dictionary way. So yeah, when I was saving it, it took 2 seconds. And when I loaded the 1,000 by 1,000, it took 7 seconds, which is extremely fast. As opposed to using dictionaries, that same thing was, it took 1 minute and 12 seconds. And if you're interested in all of these tests that I did, you could, I made a GitHub repo. You can check it out, and you can see I messed around with all different ways of saving and loading the things. So yeah, in terms of LogCraft, my game where I'm have to update a lot of tiles, this is a good approach, but like I said, I would probably test it out using, like instead of having an array of positions, I would have maybe like a pattern, you know? Because it's much more, it's faster, and it still gives you the ability to look it up. So yeah, I think I'm always a proponent for people to try to draw their own assets. It's so much fun, and you really, pixel art is, it's such an amazing medium where it's not as daunting as like other art mediums. You're literally just placing pixel. I used to use a drawing tablet when I first started out, but for the past 2 years, I literally just use a mouse to do pixel art. So you do not need any crazy equipment to start with pixel art. I really urge you guys to do it. Also, to get good with the shortcuts on A-Sprite, I have binding so that I press S to lower my brush size, D to increase it, you know, memorizing M, and like, once you get good at that, it's so fast to make pixel art, and it's so fun. I love it. I really urge everyone to try. Wow, that went up. Okay. Make them yourself. It's fun. Oh yeah, and you can also go to itch.io to get assets. There's so many different tile maps. I actually used this one for the game jam with the dungeon roll. But I also, I might, in some months, spend more money on tile assets than games, because, and it's not that I'm actually using them, but I'm studying them. Like, oh, how did they do this? How did they put this in? So it's, go through that. There's a lot of free ones as well. Like I believe this one was even free. I'm not sure, but it could be. So look at them. You can use them to study. You can also, you need to read the licenses. Sometimes if it's free, you can't modify it. But a lot of the times, if you pay for the asset, you can modify it and get good at that. And just copy it, practice, you know, do things like that. So the future for tile maps, from what I heard around the block, there might be like new tile sets for each tile type. So instead of just creating a tile set, you might create a terrain tile set and a scene tile set. Like, I think that's the direction it's heading, because yeah, the current way that it's using there's you can't do specific thing like the dual grid. You need to add other complexity to have that. I don't know if you guys have seen the dual grid system. It's pretty cool. Yeah, I hope the terrains improve in performance. And I think in the future, there also might be ways to store data in each tile, but that does, I don't know, hopefully if it is implemented, it's implemented good, because that could also slow down a lot of things. But yeah, questions?
Please raise your hand, yeah.
Hi, thanks for the talk. You just mentioned it in, towards the end. What are your experiences with dual grid?
Oh.
Ups and downsides, if you have it.
Yeah, I forgot who's, what's the name? Do you guys know the name of the girl who made that tutorial? What's her name? Yeah, I watched the video. I was like, whoa, that's so cool. I was thinking of using it for LawCraft. So the reason I ended up not using it was because it's, I like having the terrain set up in a way where I have grass and then I can put water on top and it like, it does it differently depending if I'm putting water on grass or water on sand. And with the dual grid system, I couldn't find a way to do that. I would have to, I think that was the only issue. There might have been other issues, but it is super cool. That was the issue. If you don't have like complex terrains, I think you could check it out. There's a GitHub repo on that, yeah.
Are there other questions?
Thank you for the talk. Have you run into any limitations regarding terrain? Because as far as I know, there are open issues on GitHub, and I've also opened a few of them, so I'm sorry for the maintainers. But have you seen any...
Like what issue did you run into?
Specifically with drawing terrain, sometimes it's not exactly consistent with how the diagonals and transitions work.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the times if I run into issues like that, I either made a mistake in the bit mask or I have to like adjust the tile set. I don't know if, maybe you did have an issue. I don't know, but it's very easy sometimes to just miss little things. I don't think I've ran into, or did you use 3x3 minimal, like the 47? Yeah, okay, that's... Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I haven't run into any, just the speed. That's the only issue I've ran into. Yeah.
So now that you're making a semi-procedural map, how do you handle the chunking when you handcrafting things? And more specifically, how do you handle the scene organization, scene tree?
Yeah, well, actually, I'm not making it semi. I was, that was like a middle transition where I was. But yeah, now it's, I just have, each scene just has all the different layers that I need, like cliff layer, grass layer, floor layer for like indoor floors. Because the grass layer contains like sand, water, etc. And yeah, there's a lot of complexity actually that's added when you start chunking because, you know, when you use the, when you want to get the map position, if you have different scenes, then the local is distorted because like, yeah, you need to find what scene chunk you're in and then you, yeah, it just adds a lot, especially when you're also saving data. So that's something you might run into, but chunking is very essential with terrain. So you will have to chunk, yeah. And just deal with those issues, yeah.
Thanks for this great talk.
Thank you.
I think if I understood correctly, you don't use the navigation layer in the tile set, and instead you're drawing in the regions yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you talk a little bit about why not? Because for us, the physics layers are working well, but we are currently also not using the navigation in the tile set. I'm curious what your reasons
Yeah, are. I believe I tried to use it a long time ago, and I just couldn't get it to work. I think it was even like in like the early 4.0. So to be honest, like I haven't, it's on the list to try it out again, but I couldn't get it to work properly. Yeah.
Another question? Anyone?
So you mentioned terrains are slow, but it occurs to me like 1,000 by 1,000 is, it should not be slow. Like if you're making local modifications, it needs to check just 8 tiles, right, around it, and can select the right terrain tile just based on that. So do you have any idea like why that is slow? Is there something stupid going on inside the engine?
That's why we have to blame Grout all the time. No, but it's actually really big. Like when, because I have a pretty big chunk of my world, and it's 250 by 250, so it's like 4 times that. It's actually a pretty big world. But I don't know. I've heard people implement their own terrain system, and that worked for them. I also know people liked it better in Godot 3, but they just became way more powerful in Godot 4. Like they changed significantly. So probably, yeah, the like there's custom data layers now and different things, like more information. It's not in each individual tile, but yeah, that contributes probably, but I don't know. Yeah.
Okay, is there another question? Over there.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi.
We were just discussing like the how to chunk chunks. And I was wondering, could you make the chunks into a separate tile map and then have a tile map of tile maps? Would that be a good way to chunk chunks?
It's definitely worth a try. I think, yeah, that could also be. It's just sometimes it gets really annoying when you have like all these scene tiles that have a lot of information, because you can't, like when you have a very complex scene tile and you have a bunch of variables, export variables that you're adjusting, you can't adjust them when you use them as scene tiles. You can, but it's like you need to do it after it enters the scene. You need to change everything. So it's like, yeah, but you need to think about how many variables you need to change if it makes sense. Or you could use a resource, so that would make it easier, of course. But yeah, that sounds like, that's the thing. The cool thing about tile maps is that there's so many different ways of doing many different things. Like, don't just watch tutorials and think that's the only way. Just experiment with it. That's the cool part about game development and programming in general. There's different ways to do things, and yeah. Yes.
Is there a final question? No? Well then, please give another round of applause for Jackie Coates.
Thank you, guys.